her refinements to high-temperature smelting. I had to take a break to learn some basic chemistry, but I found all that online pretty easily. Once I understood it, I had to admit, she really was a genius. She'd revolutionized the whole system and made it practical for use on the moon. I'd still beat her ass if I met her. Don't get me wrong. I must have been at it for a couple of hours because Svoboda finally came home from work.
Oh, hey, he said. How are you feeling?
I tore my attention away from the monitor to see what had caused his mental reboot. He was just kind of staring at me. I looked down. I was still wearing just the shirt I'd liberated from his closet. I was pretty sexy, I have to admit. Hope you don't mind. I gestured to the shirt.
No, no, he said. No problem. It looks good. I mean, it hangs well. I mean, how your chest makes it,
I watched him flounder for a second. When all this is over, if I'm still alive, I'm going to give you woman lessons.
Well, huh?
You really need to learn about women and how to interact with them, all right?
Oh, he said. That could be really helpful, yeah.
He took off his lab coat and hung it on the wall. Why did he wear his lab coat home instead of leaving it at the lab? Because men like fashion accessories, too. They just don't admit it.
Looks like you slept well, he said. What are you up to now?
Looking into Sanchez Aluminum, I said, I have to figure out a way to shut them down. That's my only hope of survival at this point. He sat on the bed behind me.
Are you sure you want to screw with them?
What are they going to do? Kill me harder? They're already after me. He looked at the screen.
Ooh, is that their smelting process?
Yeah, it's called the FFC Cambridge process. He perked up.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Of course it did. Svoboda's just that kind of guy. He leaned in to get a better look at the screen. It showed the chemistry at each step of the smelting process.
I've heard of the process, but I've never learned the details.
They're guarding the harvester now, I said. So I'll have to go after the smelter itself.
You got the plan? He asked.
Yeah, the start of one, I said. But it means I have to do something I hate.
Oh?
I have to get help. He held out his arms.
Well, you got me. Whatever you need.
Thanks, buddy. I'll take you up on that.
Don't call me buddy,
he grumbled. I hesitated. Okay, I won't call you buddy. Why not?
Men lessons, he said. Someday I'll give you man lessons.
I rang the doorbell for the fourth time. She was in there. She just didn't want to answer. The main entrance to the Landvik estate stood littered with flowers from well-wishers and mourners. Most of the flowers were synthetic, but a few wilting bouquets revealed how truly wealthy some of Tron's friends were. I never thought I'd miss the sight of Irina's scowling face, but a sadness overwhelmed me when I realized she wouldn't be the one opening the door. Then again, maybe no one would answer it at all. I rapped the door with my knuckles.
Lene? It's Jazz. I know this isn't a great time, but we need to talk.
I waited a bit longer. I was about to give up when the door clicked open. That was as much invitation as I was going to get. I stepped over the constellation bouquets and through the door. The once brightly lit foyer stood dark. Only the dim light from the sitting room filtered in to give any illumination at all. Someone had drawn a dozen or more circles on one wall, where the blood spatter used to be. The actual blood was gone, presumably cleaned by a professional service after Rudy and Doc Roussel were done with the scene. I followed the light into the sitting room. It, too, had changed for the worse. All the furniture was shoved against walls. The large Persian rug that once adorned the floor was nowhere to be seen. Some things just can't be cleaned. Lenny sat on a couch in the corner, mostly in the dark. As a wealthy teen girl, she usually put hours into her appearance. Today she wore sweats and a t-shirt. She had no makeup on and dried tears streaked her face. Her hair was in a loose ponytail, the universal sign of not giving a fuck. Her crutches lay askew on the floor. She held a wristwatch in her hands and stared at it with a blank expression. Hey, I said in that lame tone people use when talking to the bereaved. How you holding up?
It's a Patek Philippe, she said quietly. Best watch manufacturers on Earth. self-winding, chronograph, time zone. You name it. Nothing but the best for Dad.
I sat on the couch next to her.
He had it modified by top watchmakers in Geneva, she continued. They had to make a replacement self-winding weight out of tungsten, so it would have enough force to work in lunar gravity.
She leaned over to me and showed me the watch's face.
And he had them change the moon phase indicator to an Earth phase indicator. It was tricky, too, because Earth's phases go in the reverse order. They even modified the time zone dial to say Artemis instead of Nairobi.
She clasped the band around her thin wrist.
It's way too big for me. I'll never be able to wear it.
She angled her arm downward. The watch slid off and fell to the couch. She sniffled. I picked it up. I didn't know anything about watches, but it sure looked nice. Diamonds denoted each hour on the face except the 12. That had an emerald. Rudy has the guy who did it, I said.
I heard.
He'll rot in a Norwegian jail for life, or be executed in Russia.
Won't bring Dad or Irina back, she said.
I put my hand on her shoulder. I'm sorry for your loss. She nodded. I sighed, just to fill the awkward silence. Look, Lenny, I don't know how much Tron told you about his business dealings.
He was a crook, she said. I know. I don't care. He was my dad.
The people who killed him owned Sanchez Aluminum.
Oh, Palacio, she said. Rudy told me. I never even heard of them before yesterday.
She put her face in her hands. I expected a crying jag. She was entitled to one. But it didn't come. Instead, she turned to me and wiped her eyes.
Did you trash Sanchez's harvesters? Did Dad put you up to it?
Yes.
Why?
She asked. He wanted to take over the aluminum industry. Well, the silicon industry, actually. Interrupting Sanchez's production would let him get a city contract he needed to make that happen. Lenny stared ahead blankly, then slowly nodded.
Sounds like him. Always working an angle.
Look, I have an idea, I said, but I need your help.
You need a crippled orphan.
A crippled orphan billionaire? Yeah. I pulled my legs up onto the couch so I could face her, girl to girl. I'm going to follow through with Tron's plan. I'm going to stop Sanchez's oxygen production. I need you to be ready to take over the contract. Once you do, O Palacio will be willing to sell you Sanchez Aluminum.
Why would they sell to me?
Because if they don't, you'll make your own company, undercut their prices with your free power, and bankrupt them. They're mobsters, but they're also businessmen. You'll be offering them a big payoff to walk away when their alternative is watching the company collapse. They'll take the deal. You own all of Tron's holdings, right?
Not yet, she said. It's billions of euros, dollars, yen, and every other currency under the sun, plus entire companies, stock portfolios, God knows what else. I'm on a trust until I'm 18. The probate's going to take months, maybe years.
Not for his Artemisian slugs, I said. Our lack of regulation works in your favor. His accounts became yours the instant Doc Roussel declared him dead, and I hear he converted a fuck ton of money into slugs to prep for the Sanchez purchase. You have the money to make this happen. She stared into the distance. Lene?
It's not the money, she said. It's me. I can't do this. I'm not dead. He was a master of this stuff. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
I turned the watch over in my hands. The platinum back had Norwegian text engraved on it. I held it in front of her.
Huh. What's that say?
She glanced over.
Himmelen er ikke grensen. It means the sky is not the limit.
He was a confident man, I said.
Got him killed.
I reached into my pocket and pulled out my Swiss Army knife.
With the help of its tweezers, I detached the set pins from the metal watch band. I removed three links and put the pins back in. I took Lene's hand and slid the watch onto her wrist. She gave me a confused look but offered no resistance. I snapped the clasp shut. There. Now it fits. She shook her arm and the watch remained in place.
It's heavy.
You'll get used to it. She looked at the watch face for a long time. She wiped a mote of dust from the glass.
I guess I'll have to.
So? I prompted.
Okay. I'll do it.
She stared straight ahead.
Take the fuckers down.
I'd never noticed before, but she had her father's eyes. Dear Kelvin, thanks for helping me earlier. I was in deep shit. Now I'm in slightly shallower shit. Basically, I'm at war with a company called Sanchez Aluminum. I'll give you the full story later. For now, I need another favor. Sanchez Aluminum's smelting facility is in a mini bubble near the reactors. The reactor smelter complex is a kilometer from town. I did some research and found a 20-year-old article about the negotiations between Sanchez and KSC. KSC got really hands-on in the smelter's design process, and Sanchez didn't like it. They almost went into litigation in Kenyan court. Sanchez's argument was, it's our smelter. We don't need approval from anyone. Fuck off. KSC's counter was, it's 200 meters from our reactors. We need to know it won't blow up. Give us approval rights or we won't rent you the space, you little shits. Ultimately, KSC won because they own the mini bubble. They never sell property. They're all about rent. Anyway, the upshot is KSC must have detailed schematics of the Sanchez smelter somewhere, like super detailed, with every potential failure case analyzed and covered. I need you to get a hold of those documents. I know you work in a totally different part of KSC, but you still have access most people don't. Feel free to spread some money around in the process. I'll pay you back. Dear Jess, the plans are enclosed. They were surprisingly easy to get. No part of them was considered a company secret or industrial process. Sanchez kept the exact chemistry in the smelter to themselves, but everything else was right there in the architectural plans. I have a drinking buddy in the metallurgy lab in Building 27. They'd been consulted as part of the safety overview. He pulled the plans up on his boss's computer, which has no password protection. All I had to do was buy him a beer. So the cost was 2 beers. Had to have one myself, of course. Call it 50 slugs. Dear Kelvin, thanks, buddy. Make it 75 slugs and have another beer on me. Chapter 12. Closed for private event, read the sign. You didn't have to do that, Billy, I said.
Nonsense, love, he said. You said you needed a meeting space, so this is it.
I closed the door to Hartnell's behind me and sat at my usual spot. But you're losing revenue. He laughed.
Believe me, loaf, I've made far more from you than I'll lose by being closed for an hour in the morning.
Well, thanks. I tapped the counter. As long as I'm here. He poured me a pint and slid it over. Heya, said Dale from the doorway. You wanted to see me? Yeah, I said. I took a swig of my beer. But I don't want to tell the same story over and over, so have a seat until everyone gets here. Seriously, he groused, I've got better shit to do than beers on me. A pint of your finest, Billy. He hopped onto his seat.
Reconstituted garbage it is, said Billy.
Lenny Landvik hobbled in on her crutches. Yes, she was 16 and Hartnell's was a bar, but there's no drinking age in Artemis. It's another one of those vague rules that's enforced with punching. If Billy sold teenagers the occasional beer, it was no big deal. But if he strayed too far down the age bracket, he'd get a visit from angry parents. She sat at a nearby table and leaned her crutches against the chair. How are you doing, kiddo? I asked.
Better, she said. Not cheerful or anything, but better.
Step by step, I raised my glass to her. Keep at it.
Thanks, she said. I don't know how to bring this up, but did Dad pay you? Or did he not get a chance.
Oh, man, come on. I had planned to approach Lenny about it eventually, but not until she'd had time to mourn. Well, no, he didn't, but don't worry about it.
How much did he owe you?
Lenny, let's talk about this later.
How much?
Well, shit. I guess the conversation was going to happen right then. 1,000,000 slugs. Holy shit, said Dale. 1,000,000 slugs? I ignored him. But I don't have any way to prove it. You've got no reason to take my word.
Your word's good enough, she said. Dad always said you were the most honest businessman he'd ever worked with. I'll transfer the money today.
No, I said. I didn't deliver. The job was to stop Sanchez's oxygen production. If you want, you can pay me after I do that. But you know this isn't about money now, right?
I know, but a deal's a deal.
Billy, said Dale, all my drinks are on Jazz from now on. She's a millionaire. Right now, I'm 1,000-aire at best, I said. Buy your own drinks. Dale and I had another couple of beers and Lene fiddled with her gizmo. It would be a long time before her life had normalcy, but at least for the moment she got to be a teenage girl glued to her phone. Bob Lewis showed up at exactly 10 a.m. Bob, I said, Jazz, he said. Beer? No. He sat across from Lene at her table and said nothing further. Marines know how to wait. Svoboda came in next, carrying a box of electronics. He waved and started setting up. The damn fool had brought a digital projector and roll-up screen. He connected his gizmo, and as usual with technology, it didn't work. Unfazed, he twiddled settings. Happy as a pig in shit. One person had yet to arrive. I stared at the door, getting more and more nervous as the minutes ticked by. What time is it? I asked the room in general. Lenny checked her wristwatch.
10:13 a.m. And there's currently a half earth, by the way. It's waxing.
Good to know, I said. Finally, the door opened, and the last guest stepped in. He scanned the bar until his eyes landed on me. I slid my beer glass away. I never drank in front of him.
Hi, Mr. Bishara, said Lene.
Dad walked over to her and took her hand.
Miss Landvik, I am so sorry to hear about your father. I wept when I heard.
Thanks, she said. It's been hard, but I'm getting better.
Bob stood. Amar, good to see you.
And you? How's that rover hatch holding up?
Perfectly, hasn't leaked at all.
Glad to hear it.
Billy threw a towel over his shoulder.
Good morning, Amar. Fancy some juice? I've got a few powder flavors back here. Grape is the most popular.
Do you have cranberry?
Dad asked.
I do indeed.
Billy pulled out a pint glass and reconstituted some cranberry juice. Dale raised his glass. Mr. Bishara. Dad gave him a cold stare.
Dale?
I forget, said Dale. Do you hate me because I'm gay or because I'm Jewish?
I hate you because you broke my daughter's heart.
Fair. Dale polished off his beer. Dad sat next to me. So a Muslim walks into a bar, I said. He didn't laugh.
I'm here because you said you needed me. If you're just having a drinking party, I'd rather go back to the imams.
I'm not...
Mr. Bashara. Svoboda popped his head between us.
Hi, we haven't met. I'm Martin Svoboda. I'm a friend of Jazz's.
Dad shook his hand.
One of those friends with benefits?
Ugh, I rolled my eyes. I don't do that, Dad. This may shock you, but I haven't had sex with anyone in this whole room.
Well, it's a small room. Burn,
Svoboda said.
Anyway, I just wanted to say you did a great job raising Jazz.
You think so, Dad said.
All right, I said. Let's get started. I walked toward the white screen. Svoboda got it to work, of course. He always got shit to work.
I took a breath.
A lot's been going on, and some of you have questions, like Bob, who wants to know who did an unlicensed EVA to blow shit up, and Dad, who wants to know why I've made him hide out at the Imam's house for the last week. Settle in. I'm going to tell you everything I know. So I told them the whole sordid tale, all about the Queensland glass fire, how Trond hired me, how the job went wrong, and how it connected to the murders. That led to O Palacio, Lefty, and Jin Chu. I told them about Sanchez Aluminum's oxygen contract and Tron's plan to take it over. I turned the floor over to Svoboda to explain Zafo and how it worked. Then I finished up by telling the sea of shocked faces that dozens of mobsters were on their way to Artemis. When I stopped talking, a general silence fell across the room. Dale spoke first. I think we can all agree this is pretty fucked up, but a couple dozen mobsters can't just take over Artemis. I mean, we've had bar fights bigger than that. This isn't a gangster movie, I said. They're not going to waltz in and start bashing skulls. They'll just guard Sanchez Aluminum to make sure they keep the oxygen for power contract. We have a short window of opportunity before they get here.
I assume whatever you've concocted will be illegal, Dad said.
Very. He stood from his stool.
Then I won't participate.
Dad, this is my only chance to stay alive.
Nonsense. We can go back to Earth. My brother and Tabuk could take us in.
No, Dad. I shook my head. No running away. Saudi Arabia's your old neighborhood, but it's not mine. There's nothing for me there but gravity sickness. Artemis is my home. I'm not leaving. And I'm sure as hell not letting mobsters take over. He sat back down. He gave me a mean look, but didn't leave. That was something, at least.
Tell them about the plan, Svoboda said. I have all the visual aids ready.
All right. Bring up the schematics. He tapped his gizmo a few times and the projector showed architectural plans. The text in the title box read, Sanchez Aluminum Smelter Bubble, Metallurgical Analysis. I pointed to the screen. The smelter bubble is much smaller than a municipal bubble. It's only 30 meters across, but it still has the same double hull construction as any other bubble. Wherever there are humans, KSC requires double hulls. I walked in front of the screen and pointed to features as I spoke. Over here is the control room. It's got a big window overlooking the facility, so I'll have to be sneaky.
Is the control room its own air compartment? Dad asked.
No, it shares air with the rest of the facility. They have to access the main floor so often they didn't want an air-sealed door in their way. That's my assumption, anyway. They have an air shelter in the control room if anything goes wrong. And if the train is docked, they can just go in there, too.
Okay, Dad said.
I continued. The grinders are outside, and the grit comes in through this compression airlock. Then it moves downstairs to the lower level. The sorter centrifuge separates the anorthite from the other minerals. Then it's sintered into anodes. From there, it goes back upstairs into the smelter. I tapped a large rectangle in the middle of the schematics. This is where the magic happens. The smelter reduces anorthite into its base elements by using an assload of electricity.
FFC Cambridge process, said Svoboda. It's awesome. The anode is dipped in a calcium chloride salt bath, then electrolysis literally yanks atoms out. Oh! And the carbon cathodes get eroded, so they have to constantly resinter them. From the carbon, they recover off the CO2 byproduct. They use some of the resulting powdered aluminum to make rocket fuel, but the rest...
Calm yourself, I said. Anyway, I'm going to break in there and make the smelter smelt itself to death.
You can't spell smelt without melt,
Svoboda added. How will you do it? Dale asked. I'll crank up power to the heater, I said. The bath is normally 900 degrees Celsius, but if I can get it to 1400, the steel containment vessel will melt. Then the superheated salt bath will escape and destroy everything in the bubble. Dad scowled.
What good would this petty vandalism do?
First off, Dad, it's not petty vandalism. It's extreme vandalism. Second off, with their smelter destroyed, Sanchez won't be able to make oxygen, and the contract with the city will be up for grabs. That's where Lene comes in. Lene fidgeted as everyone turned toward her.
Yeah. Dad had her... I have enough oxygen to last Artemis a year. I'll offer to take over the contract as soon as Sanchez is in breach.
And Ngugi will rubber stamp it, I said. She wants O Palacio out of Artemis as much as we do. Bob snorted. Why should I get involved in this? Damn it, Bob, I said. I don't want to spend time in the will you or won't you help me part. If you don't understand why we have to do this, go stand in the corner until you do. You're such an asshole, said Bob. Hey, Dad shot Bob a look that made the burly Marine draw back. He's right, Dad. I am an asshole. But Artemis needs an asshole right now, and I got it drafted. I walked to the middle of the room. This moment right now is where we decide what kind of city Artemis is going to be. We can either act now or let our home degenerate into syndicate rule for generations. This isn't some theoretical scenario. They burned down a business. They murdered two people. There's a huge amount of money in play. They're not going to stop. This isn't a new thing. New York, Chicago, Tokyo, Moscow, Rome, Mexico City. They all went through hell to control their mob infestations. And those are the success stories. Big chunks of South America are still under cartel control. Let's not do that. Let's take care of the cancer before it can spread. I looked each person in the eyes. I'm not asking you to do this for me. I'm asking you to do it for Artemis. We can't let O Palacio take over. This is our one chance. They're bringing an army to town. Once those enforcers are here, we'll never be able to shut down Sanchez's oxygen flow. It'll be guarded better than Fort Knox. I paused briefly, just in case anyone wanted to argue that point. No one did. Look, we've got a lot of planning to do, so let's cut the bullshit. Bob, you're a Marine. You spent half your life protecting the United States. Now Artemis is your home, and it's in danger. Will you protect it? That hit him where it counted. I could see it in his face. I walked over to my father. Dad, do it because this is the only way to save your daughter's life. He pursed his lips.
Sleazy tactic, Jasmine.
I turned to Dale. Do I even need to explain why you have to do it? Dale dodged the question by gesturing to Billy for another beer. You're not a complete asshole, Jazz. I assume you have a plan to keep the workers from getting hurt? Bob raised his hand. And how will you get into the bubble? Even without mail-order goons on the way, Sanchez has tight security.
And what about the safety systems?
Svoboda asked.
I looked over the schematics your Earth buddy sent. The smelter has 3 redundant temperature control systems and a fail-safe copper melt plug.
And why do you need me at all?
Dad asked. All right. I put out my hands. I can answer all of that. But first, I need to know, are we done with the convincing part? Are we all on board? The room fell silent. Even Billy stopped his morning prep to see how it played out. I'm not convinced you're right, Bob said. But I can't risk Artemis having the future you described. And they killed 2 of our people. I'm in. Dad nodded.
In. You know I'm in, said Svoboda. I love a good caper.
Me too, said Lene. I mean, the being in part. I'm undecided on capers.
This buys me off, Dale said. Done with the guilt about Tyler. No more of that shit. I frowned. I can't just stop being mad. No, but you can stop wallowing in it, and you can talk to me like a normal human being. He swigged his beer without breaking eye contact. That's my price. Fine, I said. Wasn't sure how I'd accomplish that, but for the sake of the city, I had to swallow my pride. Bob used his towering form and military bearing to clear a path through the port of entry. Dad and I followed behind, pushing a cart full of welding supplies. I spotted Trigger in his parking space. I hadn't had opportunity to use him lately. I didn't have time for deliveries during all the chaos my life had become. I missed the little guy. Maybe I'd drive him around just for the hell of it when this was all over. Bob led us to one corner of the huge chamber. He'd set up temporary walls. We went around them and into the ad hoc workroom.
I hope this'll do, said Bob.
He gestured to the detached air shelter in the center of the room. It's the biggest one I could find. The cylindrical pressure vessel had a single manual hatch and four air tanks. On the back, there was a battery system to power internal fans and a chemical CO2 absorption system. Over the main hatch, a sign read, max capacity, 4 persons. Max duration, 72 hours.
Where did you get it?
Dad asked wearily.
My house. It's my own family emergency shelter.
Shit, I said. You didn't have to do that, Bob.
I knew Amar wouldn't want me stealing one. Besides, you'll buy me a new one.
Apparently I will. Damn it. That'd set me back a few thousand slugs for sure. Dad inspected the shelter with his experienced eye. He walked a lap around it, looking every detail up and down.
This will do.
All right, I'll leave you to it, said Bob. Let me know if you need anything.
Bob walked around the temporary wall and out of the room. That left me and Dad staring at each other. I picked up a welding mask from the cart. Just like old times, huh? Been a while since we did a project together.
9 years.
He threw a jumpsuit at me.
Wear the safety gear. All of it.
Oh, come on, the suit's hot as hell, and... He cut me off with a look. It's like I was 16 again. I grudgingly climbed into the jumpsuit and started sweating immediately. Ugh. How are we doing this? I asked. He reached into the cart and hefted out a stack of aluminum sheets.
We'll cut the hole in the back. We'll have to move the tanks and batteries, but that won't be a problem.
I put the welding mask on. And then what? How do we make a connection point? He leaned the panels against the vessel.
We're going to weld these around the new hole to make a skirt.
I picked one of the panels up. I spotted the manufacturer's logo stamped in the corner. Now, that is ironic. This is from Sanchez Aluminum.
They make quality material, Dad said.
Lanvik Aluminum will make quality material, too. I put the panel down. Will a corner weld hold against the vacuum? He took out a Sharpie and uncapped it. We won't have a corner. We'll soften the panels with unfocused torches and bend them over the curvature of the pressure vessel. We'll assemble them into a cylinder. He looked up at me.
And how many panels will that take?
Always a goddamn quiz. Well, I said, we shouldn't bend 5mm stock more than a 50cm radius turn. I'm guessing about 6 to make the full arc.
6 would work, he said. We'll use 8 to be safe. Now, hand me the tape measure.
I did as he asked. He carefully measured and marked points on the shelter. So, when's the lecture coming? I asked.
You're an adult. It's not my place to lecture you on anything.
But you'll continue the passive-aggressive barbs, right? I wouldn't want to miss out on those. He stood up.
I've never pretended to approve of your choices, Jasmine. I have no obligation to, but I don't try to control you either. Not since you moved out. Your life is your own.
Yay me, I said.
This is a terrible situation you've landed in, he said. I'm choosing the lesser of two evils by helping you. I've never broken the law before in my life.
I winced and looked at my feet. I really am sorry to drag you into this.
What's done is done, he said. Now put your mask on and hand me a cutting head.
I put my mask on and gave him the desired tool from the cart. He fixed the head and checked it twice. Then he meticulously checked the gas mixture valves. Then he rechecked the cutting head. What's up, Dad? You're slow as snot today.
Just being thorough.
Are you kidding? I've seen you fire up a torch with one hand and set mixture levels with the other at the same time. Why are you... Oh, I stopped talking. This wasn't a normal job. Tomorrow, his daughter's life would rely on the quality of these welds. It slowly dawned on me that, to him, this was the most critical project he'd ever done. He would accept nothing short of his absolute best. And if that meant taking all day, so be it. I stood back and let him work. After more fastidious double checks, he got started. I assisted and did what I was told. We may have our friction, but when it came to welding, he was the master, and I was the apprentice. Very few people get a chance to quantify how much their father loves them, but I did. The job should have taken 45 minutes, but Dad spent 3.5 hours on it. My father loves me 366% more than he loves anything else. Good to know. I sat on the edge of Svoboda's bed and watched him set up. He'd really gone all out. In addition to the normal monitor on his desk, he'd mounted 4 other monitors to the wall. He typed on the keyboard and magically brought each monitor to life. A little overboard, don't you think? I said. He continued typing.
2 cameras on your EVA suit, 2 on Dale's, and I need a screen for diagnostics. That's 5 screens.
Could have been windows on the same screen, though, right?
Pfft, Philistine.
I flopped back into the bed and sighed. On a scale from 1 to invade Russia in winter, how stupid is this plan?
Risky as all hell, but I don't see what else you can do. Besides, he turned to me with a grin, you have your own personal svoboda. How can you lose?
I snickered. But have I covered every angle? He shrugged.
No such thing. But for what it's worth, you got everything I can think of.
That means a lot, I said. You're pretty thorough.
Well, there is one thing,
he said. Shit, what?
Well, it's half of a thing.
He turned back to his computer and brought up the Sanchez bubble schematics.
The methane tanks bother me.
How so? I walked over and hovered behind him. My hair dangled on his face a little, but he didn't seem to mind.
There's thousands of liters of liquid methane here.
Why do they need methane?
The rocket fuel they manufacture is about 1% methane. It's needed as a combustion regulator. They import it from Earth in big-ass tanks.
Okay, what's your concern?
It's flammable. Like, super-duper flammable.
He pointed to a different part of the schematic.
And there's a huge staging tank of pure oxygen over here.
And then I'm going to add a bunch of molten steel to the room, I said. What could go wrong?
Right, that's my concern, he said. But it shouldn't be a problem. By the time the smelter melts, there won't be anyone around.
Yeah, I said. And if the tanks do leak and explode, that's great. Even more damage.
I guess, he said, clearly not convinced. It just bugs me, you know? It's not part of the plan. I don't like things that don't match a plan.
If that's the worst thing you can think of, I'm in good shape.
Guess so,
he said. I stretched my back. I wonder if I'll sleep tonight.
You crashing here?
I said. And Googie isn't going to sell me out again. Have I mentioned she's a bitch?
It's come up.
Anyway, now no one can track me down by my gizmo, so I can pay for a hotel. I'll probably be up late fretting anyway. I wouldn't want to keep you awake.
Okay,
he said. Was there a hint of disappointment in his voice? I put my hands on his shoulders. Not sure why, but I did. Thanks for always being in my corner. It means a lot to me.
Sure.
He craned his neck around to look up at me.
I'll always be there for you, Jazz.
We looked at each other for a moment.
Hey, did you try out the condom yet?
He asked. God damn it, Svoboda, I said.
What? I'm waiting for feedback here.
I threw my hands up and walked away. The huge door to the freight airlock lumbered open and revealed the desolate lunar landscape beyond. Dale checked a reading on the rover's control panel. Pressure is good, air mix A-okay, CO2 absorption on automatic. I looked over the screens in front of my seat. Batteries at 100%, wheel motor diagnostics are green, comms are 5x5. He grabbed the control stick. Port of entry airlock, request permission to disembark. Granted, came Bob's voice over the intercom. Take good care of my rover, Shapiro. Will do. Try not to screw it up, Bashara, Bob said. Bite me, I said. Dale slapped the mute button and shot me a look. You know what, Jazz? We're breaking every guild rule in the book. If we get caught, Bob and I will both get kicked out. Forever. We're risking our livelihood here. Can you be a little more fucking considerate? I unmuted the mic.
Thanks, Bob, for all this. Copy, came the clipped reply. Dale piloted the rover out of the airlock and onto the regolith. I expected things to get bumpy, but the suspension was very smooth. That, plus the area just outside, had been flattened and smoothed over by years of frequent use. Bob's rover was, simply put, the best rover on the moon. This was no dune buggy with awkward seats for EVA-suited passengers. It was fully pressurized and had a spacious interior with supplies and power enough to last for days. Both of our EVA suits were stored neatly in racks along the walls. The rover even had a partitioned airlock in the rear, meaning the cabin never had to lose pressure, even if someone went outside. Dale looked straight ahead while he drove. He refused to even cast me a sideways glance. You know what? I said. It's the EVA Guild that's a threat to your livelihood, not me. Maybe protectionist bullshit isn't the best policy. You're probably right. We should let everyone play with the airlocks. I'm sure we can trust untrained people not to annihilate the city with the press of a button. Oh, please! The Guild can have members operate the airlocks and let people manage their EVAs themselves. They're just greedy fucks running a labor cartel. Pimps went out of style a long time ago, you know. He snickered despite himself. I've missed our political arguments. Me too. I checked the time. We had a fairly tight schedule to keep. So far, so good. We turned southeast and headed toward the berm a kilometer away. Not a long drive, but it would have been a very long walk, especially dragging the modified air shelter with us. The shelter clanked against the roof as we entered the rougher terrain. We both looked up at the source of the noise, then at each other. It's strapped down tight, right? He asked. You were there when we secured it, I said. Clang. I winced. If it falls off, we pick it up, I guessed. It would cost us time we don't have, but we could hustle. And hope it didn't break. No way it breaks, I said. Dad did the welds. They'll last until the sun goes cold. Yeah, about that, he said. Will you be able to handle the next set of welds? Yes. And what if you can't? I'll die, I said. So I'm fairly motivated to get it right. He turned left slightly. Hang on. We're crossing over the pipe. The air pipeline that carried freshly minted oxygen from the smelter to Armstrong Bubble lay along the ground. On Earth, no one would be insane enough to ship pressurized oxygen gas through a pipeline. But on the lunar surface, there's nothing to burn. Also, on Earth, they usually bury pipelines to protect the system from weather, animals, and idiot humans. We don't do that here. Why would we? We don't have weather or animals, and all the idiot humans are mostly confined to the city. Dale managed the controls as the front end of the rover bucked up and down. Then the rear did the same. Is that really safe? I asked, driving over a high-pressure line like that. He adjusted one of the wheel motor controls. That pipe's walls are 8 centimeters thick. We couldn't hurt it if we tried. I have welding equipment. I could hurt it. You're a pedantic little shit, you know that? Yeah. I looked through the roof porthole. Earth hung in the sky. A half-Earth, just like Lene's watch had said. We'd strayed far enough from the city that the terrain became wholly natural. Dale navigated us around a boulder. Tyler says hi. Give him my best. He really does care about... Don't. My gizmo rang. I put it in a dashboard slot and it connected to the rover's audio system. Of course the rover had an audio system. Bob traveled in style. Yo.
Yo, Jazz, came Svoboda's voice. Where are you guys at now? I don't have a camera feed.
Still en route. The suit cams are offline. Is Dad there?
Yep, right next to me. Say hi, MR.
Hello, Jasmine, said Dad. Your friend is interesting.
You get used to him, I said. Say hi to Dale.
No.
Dale snorted.
Call me when you're suited up, said Svoboda.
Will do. Later. I hung up. Dale shook his head. Man, your dad really hates me. And it's not about Tyler either. He hated me before all that. Not for the reasons you think, I said. I still remember when I told him you were gay. I thought he'd be pissed off, but he was relieved. He actually smiled. Huh? Dale said. Once he found out you weren't nailing me, he warmed up to you a lot, but then, you know, then came the whole stealing my boyfriend thing.
Right.
We crested a small rise and saw the flatlands ahead of us. The berm stood 100 meters away. Just beyond it would be the reactor complex in Sanchez's bubble. 15 minutes till we get there, Dale said, apparently reading my thoughts. Nervous? Shitting myself. Good, he said. I know you think you're flawless on EVAs, but remember, you flunked that test. Thanks for the pep talk. I'm just saying a little humility's good on an EVA. I stared out the side window. Believe me, this past week has been humiliating enough. Chapter 13. I looked at the silver dome of the Sanchez smelter bubble. Again. My previous visit had been just 6 days earlier, but it seemed like forever ago. Of course, things were a little different this time. There'd only be one harvester out there doing its thing. That's okay. I wasn't after the harvester anyway. That was old news. Dale brought us up to the edge of the bubble, did a 3-point turn, and pointed the rear of the rover at the wall. Distance? He asked. I checked my screen. 2.4 meters. Proximity readouts are a frilly feature for cars on Earth, but critically important for lunar rovers. Crashing your pressure vessel into things is bad. It can lead to unscheduled dying. Satisfied, Dale engaged the physical brake. All right. Ready to suit up? Yep. We climbed out of our chairs and crawled to the rear of the vessel. We both stripped down to our underwear. What, I'm supposed to be demure around the gay guy? Then we put on our coolant garments. The daylight outside could boil water. EVA suits need central cooling. Next came the pressure suits themselves. I helped him into his, and he helped me into mine. Finally, we did pressure tests, tank tests, readout tests, and a bunch of other shit. Once all the checks were done, we prepared to egress. The rover airlock could fit too, though it was snug. We squeezed in and sealed the hatch. Ready for depress? Dale asked via the radio. Pretty depressed, yeah, I said. Don't joke around, not with airlock procedures. Sheesh, you really sucked the air out of the room, you know that? Jazz! Copy, ready for decompression. He turned to crank. Air hissed from the chamber to the vacuum outside. No need for a high-tech pump system. It's not like oxygen was in short supply. Thanks to smelting, Artemis had so much we didn't know what to do with it all. For the moment, anyway. Evil sardonic laugh. Ha ha ha. He spun the handle, pushed the door open, and stepped out. I followed. He climbed the ladder to the rover's roof and unhitched the rigging. I went to the other side and did the same. Then, together, we lowered the modified air shelter to the ground. Weighing in at 500 kilograms, it took both of us to make sure it came down gently. Try to keep dust off the skirt, I said. Copy. Dad had done a number on the shelter. You could hardly recognize it. It had a large hole in the rear with a half-meter-wide aluminum skirt all around it. It looked like an engine bell. Some might say putting a huge hole in a pressure vessel is a bad idea. I have no rebuttal. I clambered back up to the rover's roof and collected my welding gear. Ready to receive? He positioned himself below me and held up his arms. Ready. I handed him the tanks, torches, tool belts, and other accessories I'd need for the job. He placed each on the ground. Finally, I pulled a huge bag out of its dedicated container. Here comes the inflatable tunnel, I said. I shoved it off the roof. He caught it and laid it on the ground. I hopped off the roof and landed next to him. You shouldn't jump down that far, he said. You shouldn't fuck other people's boyfriends. Oh, come on! I could get used to this new relationship we have, I said. Help me get all this crap over to the bubble. Yeah, yeah. Together we carried or dragged everything to the wall. The arc of the dome, broken into 2-meter triangles, was vertical at ground level. I selected a reasonably clean triangle and dusted it off with a wire brush. There's no weather on the moon, but there is static electricity. Fine lunar dust gets everywhere and sticks to everything with the slightest charge. Okay, this one, I said. Help me move the shelter into position. Copy. Together we hoisted the air shelter and shuffled it over to the dome. We pressed the aluminum skirt against the shiny wall and set the shelter down. God damn, Dad's good, I said. Jesus, Dale said. He'd done an absolutely perfect job on the skirt. I mean, okay, he just had to make the point of contact with the wall flat, but holy hell, there was less than a millimeter of gap between the skirt and the wall. I brought up my arm readout, which was basically just a fancy external screen for my gizmo. The gizmo itself was safely inside the suit with me. They're not made to handle the rigors of the outdoors. I tapped a few buttons and made the call. "Yo, Jazz," said Svoboda. "How's tricks?" "So far, so good. How's the camera feed?"
"Working perfectly. I've got your suit cams on the screens."
"Be careful out there,"
came Dad's voice. "I will, Dad. Don't worry." "Dale, you getting the phone audio?" "Affirm," said Dale. I walked back to the skirt and faced it so the helmet cam would point at it. Good skirt alignment. Like, really good.
said Dad. "I see some gaps. But smaller than the bead you'll be making should be fine."
"Dad, this is some of the best precision I've ever..."
"Let's get to work," he interrupted.
I dragged the oxygen and acetylene tanks to the site and fixed the torch head.
"All right," Dad said. "Do you know how to start the flame in the vacuum?"
"Of course," I said. No way in hell I would admit I learned it the hard way just a few days ago. I set the oxygen mix very high, sparked the flame, and got it stabilized. When I'd worked over the harvesters earlier, I'd done very rudimentary joins. I just needed it to hold the pressure in long enough to blow up. These joins would be a lot more complicated. The job would have been trivial for Dad, but he didn't know anything about EVAs. Hence, our teamwork.
"Looks like a good flame," Dad said. "Start at the crown and let the bead puddle downward. Surface tension will keep it aligned with the gap."
"What about the airflow pressure?" I said. "Won't it blow droplets into the skirt?"
"Some, but not much. There are no eddy forces around the flame in a vacuum. There's just the pressure of the flame itself."
I held a rod of aluminum stock to the top of the skirt and set the flame on it. It was awkward in my EVA suit, but not too bad. A bead of molten metal formed at the tip and dribbled down. Just as Dad predicted, it wicked along the gap and filled the crack. By habit, I brought the flame down to the fill site to keep the bead molten.
"No need for that," Dad said. "The metal will stay liquid longer than you expect. There's no air to convey the heat away. Some gets lost through the metal, but the state change soaks up most of the energy. It can't radiate too far."
"I'll take your word for it," I said. I returned the flame to the aluminum stock. Dale stood a few meters away, ready to save my life. And there I was again, melting metal while in a vacuum. If a blob melted my EVA suit, my life would be in Dale's hands. If I sprung a leak, he'd have to haul me into the rover airlock. I wouldn't be able to do it myself because I'd be too busy dying of asphyxiation. Bit by bit, I worked my way around the perimeter of the skirt. Dad told me when I went too fast or slow. Finally, I got back to the start of the seam. "Phew," I said. "Time for a pressure test."
"No, it isn't," Dad said. "Run another line, all the way around. Make sure you completely cover the first weld."
"Are you kidding me?" I protested. "Dad, that weld is solid."
"Run another line, Jasmine," he said firmly. "You're not in any hurry. You're just impatient."
"Actually, I am in a hurry. I have to get this done before the Sanchez shift change."
"Run another line."
I groaned like a teenage girl. Dad really brought that out in me. "Dale, hand me more rods." "No," Dale said. "What?" "As long as you have that torch in your hand, I won't take my eyes off you. I won't be more than 3 meters away, and I won't have anything in my hands." I groaned louder. It took another 20 minutes, but I ran another seam around the skirt under Dad's watchful eye.
"Well done," said Dad.
"Thanks, Dad," I said. He was right. I'd done a good job. Now I had an air shelter perfectly welded to the smelter bubble's hull. All I had to do was cut a hole in the wall from inside the shelter, and I'd have a ghetto airlock. I set the torch down on a nearby rock and spread my hands at Dale. Now that I met his stringent requirements for safety, he ambled toward the inflatable. The inflatable was the same kind I'd helped set up during the Queensland glass fire, an accordion tube with a rigid airlock connector at each end. He and I each grabbed a hoop and backed away from each other. I headed toward the newly welded air shelter, while Dale went to the rover. I loaded all my welding equipment and tanks into the tunnel, then connected my end of it to the air shelter. Then I joined Dale, and we both climbed into the rover airlock. Together we pulled the tunnel's other connector into place. I stared down the tube toward the still-sealed air shelter hatch. "Time to test it, I guess," I said. He reached for the valve. "Keep on your toes. Just because we're in EVA suits doesn't make us safe. If we misconnected the tunnel, we could be in for an explosive decompression." "Thanks for the tip," I said. "I'll be ready to jump out of the way if a pressure wave moving the speed of sound comes at me." "You could be less of an ass."
"I could," I said, "but it's not likely."
He turned the valve and a foggy plume of air rushed in from the pressurized rover compartment. I checked my suit readouts and saw we were up 2 kilopascals, about 10% of normal Artemis pressure. An alarm blared from inside the rover. "The fuck is that?" I said. "Leak warning," Dale said. "The rover knows how much air it should take to fill the airlock, and we've gone way past that. We're filling this whole tunnel."
"Problem?"
"No," he said. "We've got plenty in the tanks, way more than we need. Bob saw to that."
"Nice."
Slowly, the tunnel inflated. It held pressure perfectly, of course. This was exactly what it was designed to do, connecting one hatch to another.
"Looks good," Dale said.
He turned the hatch crank and opened the rover's inner airlock door. He climbed into the main compartment and settled into the driver's seat. The rover was designed to accommodate a driver with or without an EVA suit. He checked the control panel. 20.4 kilopascals, 100% oxygen. "Good to go."
"Here goes nothing," I said.
I popped the vents of my EVA suit. I took a few breaths.
"Air's good."
Dale joined me in the connector and helped me desuit.
"Jesus," I shivered.
"When you release pressurized gas, it gets cold. By filling the tunnel from the rover's high-pressure tanks, we'd made a goddamn meat locker."
"Here."
Dale handed me my jumpsuit. I put it on faster than I'd ever put on clothes before.
"Well,
second fastest. My high school boyfriend's parents came home earlier than expected one day." Then he handed me his own jumpsuit. He was a big enough guy that his clothes fit over mine easily. I didn't even argue. I leapt right in. After a minute, I warmed up to something bearable.
"You all right?" he asked.
"Your lips are blue."
"I'm okay,"
I said through chattering teeth.
"Once I fire up the torch, it'll be plenty warm in here."
I pulled my gizmo out of its holster on the EVA suit, then popped an earbud into my ear.
"You still there, guys?"
"We're here," said Svoboda.
A thought struck me.
"Did you watch me strip on Dale's video feed?"
"Yep. Thanks for the show,"
said Dad's voice.
"Oh, relax, Mr. B," said Svoboda. "She kept her underwear on."
"Still,"
Dad protested. All right," I said. "Svoboda, consider that payment for all the favors you're doing me. Now, Dad, any prelim advice on this cut?"
"Let's get a look at the material."
I walked down the tunnel toward the air shelter, and Dale followed close behind. I glanced back at him.
"You going to be on my ass like that through the whole thing?"
"Pretty much," said Dale. "If there's a breach, I'll have to get your unsuited body down the tunnel and into the rover. I'll have 3 or 4 minutes before you get permanent brain damage. So, yeah, I'm going to hang nearby."
"Well, don't get too close. I need elbow room to work, and you don't want the flame anywhere near your suit."
"Agreed." I turned the air shelter valve and let air from the tunnel into the shelter. We listened to the hiss closely. If it stopped, that meant the skirt weld was airtight. If it just kept hissing, that meant there was a leak, and we'd have to go back out there and find it. The hiss grew more and more quiet, eventually coming to a stop. I cranked the valve open all the way, and there was no change.
"Seals good," I said.
"Well done,"
Dad exclaimed over the radio.
"Thanks."
"No, seriously," he said. "You made a 3-meter-long, airtight weld while wearing an EVA suit. You really could have been a master."
"Dad,"
I said, a note of warning in my voice.
"All right, all right."
He couldn't see my smile, though. It really was a hell of a weld. I cranked the hatch open and stepped in. The metal tube was freezing cold. water condensed on the walls. I gestured Dale to the front. He turned on his helmet lights and got close to the